It was good to be able to kind of get it out in a song.
The whole, you know, origin of where we're all coming from. I'm prepared for death because I don't believe in it. I think it's just getting out of one car and getting into another.
I'm Ken Womack, I'm tonight's host, and I'm thrilled to be able to invite my co-host to join us as we bring this show, this special Michael McGeer 75th birthday edition of Talk More Talk into being. Up first is Kit O'Toole. Kit is, first of all, she's the queen of all Beatles media, very well known for that role, and also the author of two extraordinary books, including the songs they were singing. Hey, Kit.
Hey, Ken. I was just, we were just talking about it. So why I'm not showing up on the screen, I'm not sure. So don't worry. I will.
I'm looking at you right now.
Oh, you are. Okay, good. It's not showing up on my end. So good. I'm okay. On it.
Okay. Well, this special Michael McGeer show is already going very, very well. Up next, we have Tom Hamyadi, who is just a wonderful person and host of the Two Legs podcast. Tom.
Hello, Kit. Hello, Ken. And
okay. Well, that looks wonderful. This special Michael McGeer episode is really cooking. Hello, right, Tom.
Hello. How are you? Can you see me? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yep. I okay. Figured we're all on screen. Yeah.
All right.
And finally, we have Ken Michaels, who is the co-host of Things We Said Today and the host of the Everything podcast.
Hi, Ken. Hi, everybody. Hello, Happy New Year. Happy New Year to all of our listeners.
Indeed. And welcome to the special Michael McGeer podcast. And up first, we have Ken Michaels with the news.
Okay. Well, there are other things going on right now besides Mike McCartney's birthday. Paul McCartney, as many of you know, gave us a New Year's Eve present by releasing a new song from the Egypt Station Sessions that didn't make the album called Get Enough. The song is actually another collaboration, songwriting collaboration, with Ryan Tedder from the band One Republic. And that actually makes it the third song that the two of them have written together following Fa You, and also the song Nothing for Free, which was a bonus track on the special release of Egypt Station, and that was only through the Target chain. Tedder also co-produced the song with Paul and Zach Skelton, and we're going to be getting everybody's opinions about the new song when we finish up the news segment. Also, Paul gave an interview to BBC Radio Scotland in which he said he often reforms the Beatles in his dreams. Oh. And he admits his sadness over the loss of his friends, John and George. He said, John and George are still a big part of my life, always will be. I often think about them with a lot of sadness because they should still be here. John's case was a terrible thing, and George's a terrible illness. Paul, his wife Nancy, and family members have been seen currently vacationing in St. Bart's, where they've been swimming, shopping, and Paul spending time with American record executive L.A. Reid. In recent years, you might know that Paul has been giving his fans a little treat now and then by issuing free downloads on his website of material that's not on his reissues. And such is the case at Christmas time, Paul released two free downloads for Dear Friend, what he called the Orchestra Up version of the song, and also a different take of Hands of Love, which is one of the songs from the Red Rose Speedway medley. And if you've never gotten Paul's downloads, all that you have to do is go to his website and give them your email address. And then on that page, all the downloads are available to you, not just the new ones, but he's kept his old ones on there too. Stuff from Flowers in the Dirt, like this one, and Distractions. There's a piano demo of Back on My Feet. So I just love the fact that he's doing that and making that free to his listeners. Anyone hear those two demos? Those two downloads?
No, yeah, I haven't heard those yet. But I did some downloading the other day.
Okay. Well, what did you think about them?
I haven't heard them yet.
Oh, I'm sorry, Ken.
Oh, no, I haven't heard them yet. But I did see that, though. Yeah, everybody, if you can go to the site, yeah, he's got a lot of different downloads on there. And some of them, as Ken said, you know, some of them from previous box sets are still up there. It's a bonanza. So I look forward to hearing those.
Well, right. The Queen is right. It is a bonanza. And I have to say, well, maybe a cornucopia, but it is special. And I really like Hands of Love, actually. I think I'm a little Dear Friended out at this point. Uh-huh. I feel like I've gotten my fill of Dear Friend, which, as you know, I adore. But right. I really, really like the Hands of Love. I like that corny, silly song anyway. And so it was fun to re-experience it. It kind of reminded me of just how beautiful it was to hear the latest beautiful mix and clarity of Little Woman Love and Hands of Love. I thought was delightful. What about you, Tom?
Yeah, I know about it. I haven't downloaded. I refuse to get into that whole download thing yet.
It's free.
Yeah, I understand that. David will send me the file, and I'll listen to it then.
if you look behind Tom, you can see that he still is old school. So.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Of course, look at me. I have books. And
yes. Ken, wow. What?
And, I mean, what the fuh? Ken only has a plant or something.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is.
It was my if you were at my office, it'd be I kick it old school at my office.
Oh, nice, very good.
Yeah,
very good.
Absolutely.
What did you think about the songs, Ken?
First of all, Dear Friend, I agree with you. There's a lot of versions out now of Dear Friend, but there's much more orchestration on this version. I like just knowing what he was experimenting with, what he took out, whether it was way too produced with this orchestration, which he obviously felt that way. Hands of Love really sounds just like the finished version that's on the Red River Speedway medley, but there's a little bit of ad-libbing towards the end singing, you know, and it goes on longer and it ends. So it's just cool that he put that on there. By the way, my background here, this is my tribute to the song, The Mess.
Very good.
You see more of my studio now.
No, that's nice. Now we already had one comment which said, "Take it, Tony," which is very appropriate for tonight.
Yes, it is.
Indeed, as we talk about wildlife, and you know, if you could go back through the mists of time for a moment, I think we would all be surprised that we're devoting, you know, nigh on an hour to talking about this album, which frankly, I like the thing. So I don't know if I'll be in the minority tonight, but you know, one of the questions that I have to start us off tonight, it's not just about your first impression, which we'll get to in a moment of the great new box set, but perhaps your feelings in general about wildlife, as we talk, since we're talking about the solo Beatles. And one of the things we do so well on this show is we discuss the albums in a kind of context. And in this case, the context is basically the summer through December of 1971, when Paul is kicking around this idea of going it again and starting a new band. So up first with you, Queen of All Media, Beatles Media, rather.
Speaking of all media, I won't object.
Okay. I mean, what the fuck? Queen of all Beatles media. So, and all media, rather. So, Kit, you know, this album has such a strange place in history. It probably netted its top 10 finish at number 10 on Billboard for the simple fact that it was McCartney and we were still very close to the Beatles' disbandment and their cultural power. Take it away, Kit.
All right.
Well, this is a good one. The Sun Queen.
First of all, yep, that's Mean Mr. Mayo. Hello, Mean Mr. Mayo. Before I get to my answer, Tom, you wanted to send a shout out to
Mr. Mayo. Yeah, Mean Mr. Mayo, I really appreciate you being here, and I want to just take the time to thank you for you promoting our show on your show. And, you know, we love your show, and we're grateful that you're here and listening. So thank you very much.
All right.
Yeah, yes, we really appreciate
great
it.
Channel. Yep. And thank you for your support. You know, this is such a fascinating album in many ways. I admit this is not, you know, and I'm going to have probably virtual things thrown at me now as I say this. This has never been one of my favorites, I will fully admit. However, listening to it and thinking about the time period, Ken, as you were just mentioning, you know, thinking about this was, of course, the very first Wings album. The band was still finding its way and trying to gel. Paul was trying to find his way as a solo artist. Of course, he had come out with McCartney and Ram and Thrillington, so it wasn't like his first solo release. But, you know, he was trying to form this new identity. And so this album, to me, in a way, it is it is the mess, but not in a bad way. You know, I mean, it is all over the place thematically, and you know, and it has that kind of homemade feeling to it. And to me, it's sort of a record of a band that's trying to find its identity, its sound. And you can hear on some of the cuts, you know, that like Tomorrow, Wildlife, you can hear those harmonies that will be a hallmark of later Wings recordings. I mean, you can just hear Wings, you know, forming on Wildlife. So that's my general take, that it's an interesting album to listen to think about, you know, in terms of his and the band's artistic development. You know, this is stage one.
I guess it's stage one, and one of the things perhaps you guys can address is, as we go around the room here virtually, I just listened to this thing, and listening to you now, you're saying, you know, it's kind of this stab at finding their way as a band. You really use an album for that. I mean, it's just out there. Tom.
Yeah, well, like Kit was just saying, it's finding that new sound, and then this album really laid the foundation of what Wings was going to become, harmony wise, in my opinion. I mean, there's some great, beautiful harmonies, such as on Wildlife and Tomorrow, and even Some People Never Know. Going back into my early, you know, Beatle, you know, getting into the Beatles years, you know, this was an album that people told me, hey, you know, don't waste your time with this one. No one cares about it. It's a throwaway. And let me tell you, 10 years later, I finally listened to the album, and I wanted to kick all those people in the ass because I really enjoyed. I know some people, you know, pick on Bip Bop, they pick on Mumbo, they pick on maybe, you know, Love is Strange. But, you know, the songs that are people consider bad, I think the songs that are really good, in my opinion, outweigh those songs that are people consider bad. So in my case, I really enjoy the second half of this album. This is where I think where you really get those great harmonies that we, you know, discover later on in the Wings career. Like Kit, you would agree with the great Magneto and Titania, man. I mean, those wonderful, wonderful harmonies in that song. You know, what
Tom.
Go ahead.
Let's talk about you for a minute, because so the album comes out and you are such a victim of peer pressure that just anybody was able to tell you, hey man, don't listen to Wildlife, and you just waited a decade.
I think we
need to dig into this a little bit.
You know, and that's where I tell people now. It's like, I would never tell anybody to not listen to their favorite artists, you know, records or songs or whatnot. I think that's just the wrong thing to do. If you're a fan of McCartney, you should listen to Wildlife. I mean, don't, you know, let other people judge, you know, what you do or what you listen to when it comes to music, you know. So unfortunately,
I'm glad to hear that. Yeah. I didn't know you were so, you know, susceptible to that.
Well,
kind
you know,
of-
in my younger years, I was very, very influenced by other people.
I know. No, we're going to come back to this theme.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Ken Michaels. Oh no, it's too late.
Well, around the time when Wildlife came out, it didn't really sink into me, that album. It was always there. I listened to it off and on. There were certain songs that really grabbed me, especially Tomorrow, which, you know, if ever I put together a McCartney compilation, Tomorrow has got to be in there. It's an essential part of his catalog. And I've always loved Love is Strange, and Some People Never Know. But, you know, I like every album Paul McCartney's released, all in varying degrees. I would never say he's put out what I consider to be a bad album. Every single album from his catalog has some, at the very least, worthwhile material. And as the years have gone on, I've really come to appreciate Wildlife a lot more. It still may be closer to the bottom of the barrel of all of Paul's albums, but that's still, that's kind of like saying, you know, what's the worst Beatles album? And they're all very good. So for me with Wildlife, what I'm appreciating now, I think there are a lot of fans that really like the very simple production that Paul had early on in his career, in particular the 70s, and especially something like this, Red Rose Speedway, as opposed to more polished efforts. You know, some people just prefer these recordings from the 70s, especially the early 70s. There's a lot of fans that go back to this. They go back to the first McCartney album. They love Ram, which actually was a bit more produced. And I, more than anything, I'm more fascinated with this period than ever before, because Paul was making this tremendous transition going from Ram to Wildlife. As I said, Ram was a very, was much more produced, but there's a lot of quirkiness and freeform to Ram, and a lot of people are attracted to that. But to go from that to Wildlife, which was really stripped down, pure, raw, intense, very little production, you know, except for Dear Friend, there's orchestration right. there. It's the band as they are.
Yeah, you know, Ken, that's those are some very good points. And I like your analysis of Ram, because it's often thrown in with this kind of homespun, lo-fi, McCartney, Ram, and Wildlife kind of triumvirate. And of course, you could easily throw in our friend Red Rose Speedway. But what's interesting is, like you said, it's the illusion of not being overproduced. Clearly with Wildlife, Paul's trying to make a statement too about what this band's going to be. There was a wonderful comment a moment ago from one of our viewers, Michael, when he said it was sort of like a garage band album. Yeah. You know, and it's or almost at times grungy in places. And it's fun for me in that way. Unlike Tom, I was sort of enjoying it for myself many years ago, and not just falling for peer pressure. And by the way, later we're going to talk about Tom's voting record and how he makes those kind of decisions. But before we get to that, so everybody lean in with me now. I'm serious. Lean in.
All right.
Yes. Okay. Now look at the cover. You remember the cover of Wildlife? Uh-huh. I mean, even that, right? You can lean back now. okay. Yes, you can think for yourself. I mean, I showed the cover, and then you showed the cover. I don't see that as any kind of mindless Pied Piper stuff. You're fine. But in any event. So what's the statement with this record? As you've all said in one way or another, this kind of starter album a starter album that feels underproduced, that's hasty, without a doubt, and has this cover. What is the impression Paul is trying to give us, queen of all media?
Well, I think, you know, again, it really sets the tone for this whole album. I mean, this is about, you know, it's homespun. You know, this is definitely, stripping away any kind of glamour, you know, and so many songs on this album, you know, celebrate nature and, you know, being out and escape and so forth. And to me, that's what that album cover is all about. I also find it interesting, of course, that he didn't put the word wings on the cover. I mean, it was just out there, you know. And he didn't want it, he said. And I think part of it was he wanted people to judge it on its own merits. But I think, you know, it also signals a new beginning for him. And I think it also signals that this was the point in his life. You know, he wanted simplicity, it was about home life. And this whole album reflects that. So I will say, I think that cover does a nice job of summarizing and giving you an introduction as to what this entire album is going to be like.
Right. It's a kind of choreography in a way of how he wants us to experience it. We're not getting a single release, right? There's no record in advance. The first record from Wings is an LP, you know, which is no, but that's an incredible risk. You know, without doubt. Tom, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, like Kit said, I mean, I think that that covers signifies beginning. You know, I'm, you know, I just playing around with the album today, and it's signifies, you know, the beginning for Paul's new band, maybe his attempt to, you know, push the past behind and start new. And I like how it's, you know, it feels like it's a homemade record, and it's almost kind of like a step back from Ram in a way, where, you know, we've got all these new people now in our band, so let's start fresh. We're almost like how we did with the McCartney album, how it was a homemade album, and you know, not too polished, or if you will. So yeah, I absolutely feel the same way Kit does, and she's, you know, took the words right out of my mouth. So thank you, Kit.
We'll go with you first next time, Tom. I don't like the way she does that. Okay.
Yeah. I'm the queen, damn it.
Yeah. Well, sometimes you have to take it like that.
That's right.
Ken Michaels.
I really think it was a very ballsy move on the part of McCartney to launch his band with an album like this. You know, you would have thought that he would have done something more polished, you know, something more like an Abbey Road type album. But to start a band off and to have something that's this, you know, simple and pure and raw, you know, I just think that took a lot of guts for him. If I had a band, I wouldn't have made that move. especially with the talent that McCartney has. But this was his way of saying, this is who we are. This is a new band. We're starting out fresh. And I just love the simplicity of the album and the fact that it is, you know, not a heavily produced record. And within that, you also have a lot of variety, as you always have with a McCartney album. I mean, I actually really love Mumbo. And just to start off an album like that with a jam, with words that don't even make any sense, but it's got, you know, larynx tearing vocals from Paul like that. I can listen to Paul's vocals singing like that. I wish it can go on for 10 minutes like that. You know, I love that kind of stuff. Bebop is the exact opposite of that. It's got that silliness, that childlike type song to it. But Paul is so good at doing those acoustic songs. And it doesn't even bother me at times if a lot of what he writes about may not make all that much sense lyrically. You know, same thing with Hey Diddle, for that matter. It's all in the same kind of canon there. I loved Love is Strange. I thought it was a very unique arrangement. A reggae arrangement at that time, very early on.
Well, we're going to spend some time on that song for sure, Ken.
Yeah.
We just got a great comment here from Rob. Our good friend, talking about the cover signifying Paul going for a ride, this kind of countrified atmosphere he's creating, Country Dreamer. And he mentioned to me one of the great Wings B-sides, I Lie Around. And you, for me, I'm glad Rob brought that up. When I think about the song I Lie Around, when I'm listening to it, I often sort of see that cover of Wildlife, because you've got the sound of some kind of country, I don't know, skinny dipping or something. Kit, you'd know better about that. But it's this bizarre kind of, you know, frivolity and family fun. Well, that doesn't make sense.
More of a laid-back feeling.
Yeah, thank you. There we go. I don't know. If you hadn't stopped me, Tom, I had no idea where that was going. I really don't know. But, it, you know, Paul McCartney is very competitive, right? Is there any doubt about that? He often would amp the Beatles up trying to be competitive about various issues. And this doesn't seem like a competitive move, like Ken Michael said. You know, if he were starting a band, this is not what he would have done. And think about what is happening in that time. They wrap up Abbey Road on, what, August 20th, I guess. By the end of the year, you know, Lennon's made in 1969. I'm thinking of 70 moreover, but in 1970, we have Plastic Ono Band, All Things Must Pass. Paul has McCartney the next year, two records. You know, it's quite staggering just how quickly all of this was moving and how much material was being created in that very tight, space. That even calls into question even more why he would do this. Tom, do you have any standout cuts that you really like on this record?
Absolutely. The one that should have been a single. I know we got, what was it? Love is Strange was supposed to be a single. We got a single edit on the bonus. But the one I think that should have been the single was Tomorrow. I think that's the most commercial track on the album and just begs for radio play. I don't know, Ken Michaels, maybe you might have heard it on the radio a few times. I'm not sure if it got any airplay back then. Only because I was unborn yet, but
wait. What are you saying? Michaels is old?
I am.
Anyways.
I'm the oldest one here now.
Yes, getting back, my favorite song by far is Some People Never Know. I am a sucker for ballads. I love Paul's voice on this, and I you know, I've grown to love Linda's singing voice, and that's the standout track for me. I love the rough mix, which, you know, maybe we'll talk about in a little later how the difference in the rough mix with Denny Sywell doing his trumpet solo towards the end of the song, which you don't get on the finished product. And it's just absolute beautiful song, in my opinion.
You know,
so those are the two that stand out to me.
Yeah, you know, Tom, on that song, that's always occurred to me as a kind of, that's a song for people who are in love or falling in love.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, in the second verse, you know, like a fool, I'm far away. I travel a lot. I work out of town a lot. And, you know, and oftentimes I think of that song when I'm out of town, you know, and, you know, every night I hope and pray that, you know, I'll be coming home to stay, you know. So it's, you know, it means a lot to me in so many different ways. And it's just the first song I fell in love with when I first listened to the album. So.
And that's same here. On the single issue, you know, if Tomorrow would come out, Tomorrow, is that any better or worse a track than Another Day?
No, I don't think so. No.
And I mean, I love both the songs, so I shouldn't have said worse, but you know what I'm trying to say, comparatively speaking.
Right.
It probably had as much of a shot. Mm-hmm. What about you, Kit?
Well, I've always loved the title track. I just think I love Paul's voice on there. And by the way, you know, I think many times on this album, you could tell he was really trying to, I think, stretch his voice a bit more. And I mean that even on Bebop, he uses a different kind of vocal, but on Wildlife, I just love that, you know, that bluesy, you know, kind of rap he gets in there. And the I love the harmonies at the end too, you know, that whatever happened to, and you know, and it goes into this sort of climbing. I mean, and you know, it's just one of those songs that, I mean, I still walk, well, I don't walk around all the time doing this, or but I love what, you know, the animals in the zoo, and I mean, I just, it's just a great song. I mean, it's as I said, it's got that bluesy feel. It's, and there are different ways you can interpret it. I've you know, seen and heard all different ways of interpreting it. I mean, you know, are we?
Now you see, Kat, I could watch you do that Wildlife bit all night. I mean, everybody nod your head, huh? I'm right on this.
I mean, no, I don't walk around all day yelling animals in the zoo, but, you know, as I said, I'd be locked up. But that's always been a song I've just been drawn to. Love is Strange, that's a song I've really grown to like a lot. I love that reggae arrangement. I think that's one of the best arranged songs on the whole album. You know, from the harmonies to, you know, the scratchy guitar. I mean, it just a really creative reimagining of the original song. I mean, it's completely different. You know,
do you think that might have made it if it had been a single? I mean, it's just kind of organic and fun enough that in the early 70s, it might have been an interesting choice.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, and of course, except I guess that was more the late 70s, there was this, I guess it was in the early 70s too, an increasing interest in reggae. And of course, Paul's flirted with reggae many times, you know, throughout his career. And I've really grown to appreciate that. And as everybody said, Tomorrow. That is just great melody. I agree. Could have been a single.
Now, Ken, if you had a desert island track from this album, you can only take one. Okay.
Yeah.
Which one is it?
Tomorrow. I mean, when I don't even have to think about it,
Yeah.
It's just a perfect song. And you're talking about Paul's vocals kit on this album. Yeah. Listen to the coda on Tomorrow, which reminds you a bit of his voice on Say Oh Darling.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot like that. But it's just so catchy, this song. I just love everything about it. It just flows. The melody flows so well. I could have seen that as a single. There's a lot of songs throughout Paul's career I could have seen as singles that weren't released as singles. And when you're coming off Another Day and Uncle Albert Admiral Halsey in America, Tomorrow could have bounced off of that and done something well. I also do think Love is Strange had possibilities as a single as well.
So, okay, we can't go back through time and handle the question I'm about to ask. But what do you think, Ken? If Maybe I'm Amazed is released from McCartney, is it number one?
Ooh.
Yeah, who saw that coming, huh?
Whoa.
I mean, I didn't know I was going to say it.
I think so.
What a hell of a year.
Right back to back with Let It Be.
And then The Long and Winding Road.
Yeah, sure. It's possible. I always preferred the studio version of Maybe I'm Amazed myself, as much as I love the Wings Over America version.
Yeah, well, I'm asking about 1970. So you're right there with me.
Yeah.
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 What's this attitude he has about singles with these two records? Because the single was such a driver and obviously is just as much, if not more so now. What is that decision?
Well, listen, the Beatles come from a time when they released albums that didn't have singles on them.
Yep.
That's what they were known for. And they released songs that were strictly singles. And you know what the history of all that was. They didn't want to feel like they were going to cheat their fans by putting out the same song on a single, also on an album, so you'd have to buy it twice. They didn't do that. The Beatles were loaded with singles, the past masters material that weren't on albums. And they had, look, Sgt. Pepper didn't have a single. Come on.
And I know all of that, but I'm talking about 1970 when he's coming out of the gate. I just can't help thinking, what a way to begin.
Right. That's a good question. I don't know why he wouldn't do that.
Well, look, when we get him on this show, we're going to find out.
I think it's something that he struggled throughout the 70s is the confidence thing. Maybe he didn't have confidence enough in that song to release it as a single or many singles, because you look at it, up until 74, he only released two singles that were from albums, and the rest, four or five were non-LP singles. So, I mean, if you read a lot of the texts in these archive sets, I mean, you get a lot of, hey, he just didn't have the confidence at that time. Especially with a song like Mullican Tire, he had to be convinced to release that as a single. So, that's my opinion on that. I mean, it's definitely, I think it was a confidence issue on his part.
You're talking through Red Rose Speedway. There were two singles.
Right.
Because once you got to Band on the Run, you had three singles.
Yeah, but, well, yes, but that wasn't until 74, because the first single from that was Hell on Wheels. And that,
that was 73.
That was still 73, right. But up until 74, right.
Okay.
Well, and in Paul's opinion at the time, it wasn't on an album.
Right.
It was put on it here. Yeah.
So you've got that. And obviously in the UK, you had Backseat of My Car for Rain.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Which is a hell of a tune too. And what's interesting about this period, Ken, you mentioned the end of Tomorrow, which is just such a dramatic conclusion to a song that was working a very different cadence, for most of its time. And then boom, it does that. That was fantastic. The way that, that unfolded. Paul's doing so much of this so effortlessly, right?
Mm-hmm.
I Lie Around, The Mess, not The Place Behind You, Ken, but the song, it's really quite staggering how effortlessly he was able to do that for so long. That's why you can say, and I will refrain from making fun of you, that you can say you actually like the McCartney albums all of them, because every album does have something. Yeah. It may be one thing on occasion, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Sometimes the pickings are slim. Sometimes they're proliferate.
Right.
Wow, I love it. That should be on my grave. Sometimes, sometimes the pickings are slim. Other times they're proliferate. Right, Kit?
That's right.
Yeah, I know. So,
But you know, I did an interview with Denny Seiwell a couple of weeks ago, which is on my website now. And I was commenting to him that at this particular time, I mean, think about the fact that he was on the Ram album and then made the transition to the first Wings album and was on Red Rose Speedway and the singles on 1972 that came out, plus all the other activity, all the tours. This was an amazingly prolific period for Paul. He's always been prolific. But once you add all that material, he was on fire in 1971, 72, and 73. There's so much great material that came out of him. And Denny was a part of, you know, all of that up until the Band on the Run album. It's just amazing when you think about how much came out of him, so much so that you have all this extra material on Wildlife and Red Rose Speedway that we're, you know, about to talk about. But it's such an incredibly it's fertile period in Paul's you know, career. It's just amazing. It's mind-boggling when you think about
now,
it.
Now, Ken, okay, so you bring it up. Was there any insight from Denny how he this is a question that I know has been answered many times in the press, and I'm sure folks can hear some great stuff on your website about it, but why do you leave a band like that that, you know, has scored several times and did seem teed up? You know, as I've read, like Tom in almanacs that have been saved from that period, that we don't remember, but, they seem so well teed up. Why would Denny leave that band?
Well, from what he has said, it was more of a money issue that he wasn't getting paid. And a lot of that was due to the fact that Paul's money was tied up in Apple at the time. I mean, that's the reason that I've heard from him. You know, he has only spoken glowingly of working with Paul and being in Wings. And at a time when, and I know I bring this up a lot, there's so many fans out there that don't look at Wings as though it was a real band, that it was Paul and, you know, his henchmen or whatever, his sidemen, you know. And Denny will defend Wings. And all you have to do is listen to my interview, and it's almost like, you know, it bothers him that anybody would even think to ask that question. He thought that Wings was a very collaborative effort. Okay. He would take ideas, Paul would take ideas from the band, and if he liked them, he would go with them. And in most cases, the band members played what they felt like, and Paul went with it. And they even made decisions together, like Red Rose Speedway, he was telling me, that they decided what was on Red Rose Speedway, you know, on the album that got released with all this extra material. It was more a case of not just what was the best material, but what flowed together really well. So they were involved with the creative side of Wings, but not with the business side. Paul had
in this fabulous book that comes.
Oh, yeah.
Can you hold that up again, Kit?
Yes, indeed.
That's nice.
Wonderful,
okay.
Wonderful book with this also.
Turn it around.
Yeah, Tom Boyd had this great picture of Paul.
Yeah. Oh,
so,
wow.
Nice portrait here. Denny Seiwell makes that point many times in this book about how collaborative it was.
Yeah.
That Paul was definitely open to new ideas and so forth. I also wondered with Denny if it was another reason he left was he says many times in the book that this was very different from the way he normally worked. Because as I recall, I mean, he was really a jazz drummer. I mean, jazz was a bit more of his background. He talked about that, I think, a few years ago when he was at the fest and he did a wonderful drumming demonstration of his stuff on Ram, which was just fascinating to watch. But he said this was really a shift for him in the way, you know, working with Paul. I mean, it was a bit different that it was kind of so loose and that sort of thing. And so I don't know. I didn't know if that was part of it. And, you know, Ken, I haven't heard the interview yet, so I'm not sure if Denny talks about that. But, you know, if that was another reason why he left, that he just wasn't quite as used to working in such a kind of unstructured way, or I don't know.
So while you're bringing up that, Kit, What about the other Denny?
Yes, indeed, Denny Wayne. You know, it was really interesting. I was looking at, and I'm just scrolling here to find it, a review that ran in Rolling Stone when this first came out, and the Wildlife, and it was really interesting. It says, passing notes could be made of the invisibility in wings of former Moody Blues leader and Air Force man Denny Wayne, a musician of some stature in England. It is difficult to imagine how he'll remain content with the unspecified background role he plays on this record.
Is why she's the queen.
That's right. You know, but I mean, I just found that fascinating because, you know, it's the kid is the goods. Thank you. thank you, Bob.
You say Kit is the goods.
I am the
Kit,
goods.
But does Kit have the goods?
That's right. That's right. I have the goods.
That'll be our next show.
That's right. That's the title of the next show. But yeah, I mean, you know, who could have predicted at the time, I guess, or at least outsiders, that Denny would be the most consistent member of Wings and the most, other than Paul, influential.
Especially if you're a man of such stature.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, you know, and
an invisible man of stature.
I mean, I just thought that was a fascinating statement, and he's definitely not as upfront as he is on future Wings albums on this one. I mean, he's singing harmonies, and I mean, if he's involved in other ways too, but it's definitely not in the foreground as in later. Later releases. So again, you know, this is just the start of the band, and I think they were all trying to find their way as to what their roles were going to be in this band, and Denny Wayne is no exception. So it's just interesting when you think about that comment. You listen to Wildlife, how we would emerge. As the years went on, as the closest collaborator that Paul had to John, in the 70s in terms of the frequency they worked together, so really interesting.
Yeah.
Hey, now, Ken, before we get to Tom, does Denny keep in touch with Paul?
He said in recent interviews that he recently went to see a UB40 show with Paul. But I don't know if he speaks with him on a regular basis.
Did he mean in the 80s?
Well,
time may flow differently for different people. I only know my experience looking outward.
I would hope that when he said recent, it was in the last few years.
I hope so.
Denny Seiwell keeps in contact with Paul.
Well, that's the Denny I meant. Sorry. Hey, go ahead, Tom. Tom, what do you think about Denny Lane?
Yeah, I mean, just like Kit said, I mean, you know, here's a guy that was trying to find his footing as well, just like Paul. I mean, months earlier, he was sleeping in the back of his manager's office. You know, he wasn't doing anything. He just got out of a Ginger Baker's, was it called Air Force? Was that the name of the band? And so I would imagine that him getting this phone call from Paul was probably a shock from him, but a pleasurable shock. I mean, if anything, I mean, here he is. He's going to get to work with somebody that he's had experience with, being on tour, I believe, in England with the Beatles, and you know, getting to know Paul. And I think in the book, I mean, they talk about how they had that close, English, camaraderie, if you will. And so it made it easier for them to get together or work together and get along. So, for him, just like Paul, I think it was those two, refining themselves. And then it did take some time, for him to feel comfortable, if you will, writing songs with Paul, or singing with Paul or anything. But I just think that, yeah, he definitely found his footing later, especially with albums like London Town and obviously Mull of Kintyre. I'm glad he was there, though. That's for sure.
Oh, me too. And he sings on I Lie Around. And, it must have been good for Paul to get all that Englishness. He never had that
feel. No, not at all. No. That's why he brought Linda into the band, to get rid of some of that.
There you go. That's right. What about Denny Lane, Ken Michaels?
I think he brought so much to the group. I mean, when I think about the Wings sound, I do think about the harmonies of Paul, Linda, and Denny. And, you know, the three of them were just so locked in their sound together. And I also remember Denny telling me, because I've interviewed him several times too, that he brought like a folk element into Wings, which Paul can relate to. And then, you know, you mentioned London Town there, Tom, five songs they co-wrote together. You know, they blended so well together. And I think he was just a vital part of Wings, obviously. Could I just add one thing that, because Kit was mentioning the article on Rolling Stone before, when Wildlife, I just wanted to add one thing, and that's the way this article ends. Uh-huh. It's a very ironic ending here. It says in this review of Wildlife, "My own conviction is that we'd be foolish to expect anything much more earth-shaking than Wildlife out of McCartney for a good long while. Not, I dare say, before he extricates himself from record and publishing companies that he feels little love for, which may very well not happen until the latter part of this decade." Could you ever be more wrong? Oh my God.
Yeah, a lot of the review, it's a strange review, because it does get into the music, but it also gets into, well, did Paul just sort of throw this project together because he doesn't really want to be a part of Apple anymore, and so he just wanted to put out something substandard? And then he goes into all different directions with, you know, what could he possibly mean through Wildlife? It's a, you know, it's just funny to read it now. you know, he was kind of off base in some of his comments, for sure.
Right.
Well, it's, you know, it's still food for thought. I mean, Paul is on a strange journey during this point. There's no doubt about it. You know, he had come out of a serious depression in the fall of 69, early 1970. He wasn't used to that. He's really taking this enormous risk at this time. You know, we have to give him a lot of credit for taking the kind of risks a lot of people simply would not when you come out of a band like the Beatles. In fact, if anybody came out well, I suppose it's George Harrison, right? You know, for another episode about All Things Must Pass. But Paul is taking his sweet time about finding himself in that post-Beatles world. So let's talk about the outtakes a little bit. Up first, Kit, do you have any thoughts about those?
Oh, yes, I do, Ken. First of all, when the wind is blowing, that is gorgeous.
Absolutely.
Yep. That to me was the stunner of the outtakes, maybe even the whole set for me in some ways. I mean, what a beautiful song. It's a shame that yes, I know it was eventually recycled for the Kanye West song All Day, so it did sort of see the light of day before this. But it you know, what a beautiful, haunting song, and very different from what Paul has done. I mean, it had such a, to me, a bit of an eerie quality. I just was knocked out by that. I thought that was just beautiful. Beautiful vocals from him, you know, very gentle sound, the whistling at the end. I mean, just, as I said, absolutely haunting. And I also loved the Grey Cock and Seagull race. That was that was fun. That was fun to listen to. Who knew that, you know, Sleigh Bells could rock like that? I really, you know, that was a surprise for me. But it was, that was the other one that was I'll take that was really enjoyable.
Very nice. Now, Kit, you have a homework assignment. You need to listen to Radiohead's Airbag tonight.
Ah, is that another Rocket Sleigh Bell song?
Yes, you need to study that.
All right, I'll do that.
Yeah, report back by tomorrow at midnight. Okay, go ahead, Tom. Outtakes.
Yes, absolutely. The gem of this bonus material is When the Wind is Blowing. It is absolutely beautiful. I did read somewhere, but I can't find it, so I don't want to confirm it, that it was thought for an early rendition of Rupert the Bear Project, but all right, so there you go. so that would have been cool. I've never been a big fan of the instrumental version of Give Ireland Back to the Irish, so I won't talk about that. However, there is a pretty cool, I mean, Indeed I Do is really fun with Linda's backing vocals on that. And then there's a little bonus after that African Yeah Yeah song. If you listen, if you wait like 10 seconds, you'll get a New Orleans style kind of trumpet led instrumental after that. So if you haven't listened to all of African Yeah Yeah, you'll do that and you'll get a little treat after that. So definitely When the Wind is Blowing is by far the prize of the bonus audio, in my opinion. And I did kind of do a little bit of a, you know, side-by-side rendition of Give Ireland Back to the Irish. I had it right here, but I had the McCartney collection version of the Wildlife, and I was comparing it to the new Wildlife. And it does seem the older one did seem a little cleaner for some reason, but this one did sound a little louder. But, you know, but other than that, you know, he got flack, and I think in the past for a few of the for some of the audio bonus discs about not having, you know, enough material on there. So I think, you know, with this one and Red Rose Speedway, I think he's really well made up for those past you know, blunders, if you will.
Right, that gives us great hope for the later in this year when
for the future. Yeah,
well, good one. when undoubtedly we'll get that Back to the Egg set.
Yes, absolutely.
We hope.
Yep.
Oh, it's happening. It's London Town and Back to the Egg.
Okay.
Yeah. You heard it here, Ken. What
about, if you say that's how it is, I'm taking your word for it.
Well, you can bet on it. Okay. So, Ken, what about you? What about the bonus materials?
Well, I have to agree with Kid and Tom. I mean, When the Wind is Blowing is really it's the biggest highlight of all of the bonus tracks for me. And to me, the whole story about how that song
it's in the book
was written is fascinating. Yeah. Paul has actually talked about this before because he was on the British TV show Parkinson talking about it. But it's really fascinating when Linda gave birth to Mary. In the hospital, Paul was hanging around looking at a painting. It was a Picasso painting, and it was of a man playing the guitar, and he was using two fingers to play a chord. And Paul thought, well, what chord was that? So he tried to figure it out. He did that, and he built the song, moving his fingers around with you know, two fingers at a time to try to write a song that way. And so the melody that came out of that was really beautiful. And I don't know why it wasn't released originally at the time. Of course, there's no words to it other than the title. But it is true. I have seen, and going back to my bootleg, which I haven't played for a while, of Rupert the Bear, when Paul was composing all the songs for the full-length feature of Rupert the Bear, that was one of the songs that was included in there. So he was thinking all along of releasing it in some way. Mm-hmm. And then the whole thing with Kanye West inserting that at the end of All Day, his song, that was pretty cool.
Okay, so I'm going to go in reverse order because if we could keep that deep cut, which song on Wildlife Now would you jettison? And I will tell you mine at the end. Go ahead, Ken Michaels. Which one do we get rid of?
Oh, I suppose Bip Bop. I mean, I love Bebop. I love all the songs on there, but I nobody's talked about I Am Your Singer, which I happen to like a lot because I love how Paul and Linda's vocals blend so well together and that Linda does sing lead too. Mm-hmm. And they sound really, really fine together on that song. But I guess probably the weakest song is Bebop for me. I would take that out.
Okay, turning to you, Tom.
I agree 100%. Bip. Bye bye.
Bip it right off of that record. Yes. Yeah. Gotcha. Okay. Kitten.
First choice Bip Bop. If otherwise, I would probably. I'm really sorry, Ken, but I am your singer. I'm sorry, that's guys. Okay. It just has never connected with me, you know, but I think Bip Bop would be the most obvious. Choice. You know,
I think the song would go great on the album. I think it flows with the other songs as well, especially with a song like Tomorrow and Some People Never Know and, you know, maybe even I Am Your Singer. So I think it would fit nicely on that album.
Very well said. Now, my point may be controversial here. Kit, look away.
Uh-oh.
I would ditch the title track. Oh, yeah. I'd be losing that thing, and I might even throw in I Am Your Singer, too.
Okay, yeah. I'm with you on that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I probably would get rid of both of them. Just for
no.
Yeah.
What do you have against the song, Wildlife? What do you have against it?
Oh, I don't know. And, you know, so much of this, right, is conditional in how we first experience a song. But for whatever reason, my first moments with Wildlife were not good, and they have not improved in the interim. So
it does drag on, I think, a little too long. I think 6 minutes is probably, you could probably cut that song down to 4 minutes.
Okay, you know? I can agree with that. Yeah, right.
I would totally agree with that point. That's very insightful, Tom. Mm-hmm. And that has a lot to do with it. The idea of Wildlife isn't worth the length that it's given. Mm. It reminds me of certain songs by Oasis, right? Where they're like in the eighth minute and you're thinking, this was good in three.
Right.
So in a way, it's an idea that sort of hasn't merited that kind of extended treatment. I think that's why I say that. But I could sure heard that deep cut on the record. And I got to agree with Mr. Mayo. I am I'm a little bit smitten and have been with Bebop. I would never list it in my, you know, my great array of top hits by McCartney or deep cuts, but it just has a warmth to it that's never offended me that much, like Wildlife.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay.
Fair enough.
Here's a defense of Wildlife. Rob. Thank you, Rob.
Hell yeah. Oh no, a lot of people are defending you up there. Yeah, people are defending you. You're very popular, Kit. Don't doubt it.
Right.
Yeah, you're the one. Okay. So well, we're almost out of time, folks. Wow, another person, Stephen Cornish, is defending you. What's next? Stephen, even all 6 minutes, Stephen?
Should we give our thoughts about
the zoo?
go ahead. What was that, Tom? We are running out of time.
Should we give our quick thoughts about Get Enough?
Oh, yes.
But we haven't even talked about the rest of the box set.
Yeah, that's true. I'll keep going.
There's a DVD.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I'm looking at the time, and we're running out of time. Tom, you should just continue.
Yeah, all right. We can probably put some of this into the next episode, but you know, quick. I guess.
Oh
we
my God! Some... Multiple episodes on Wildlife.
No, just finishing off the next one. But I guess you know, yeah. Quick, just very quick opinions on Get Enough, and we can talk about that more in depth in the.
Oh, let's go. You're up first, Queen.
Kind of unfortunate. I just think auto-tune is so played out. You know, it's overused. I did like, I've been telling the guys toward the end, that ELO section, you know, where I call the ELO section, when the more the instrumentation comes in, if it had been that way throughout the song, maybe I would have, you know, gotten next to it. But other than that, yeah, kind of a misfire.
Yeah. What about you, Tom?
Well, you know, it's still growing on me. I think it's still, you know, the first, you know, 2:57 is a clunker. That last minute, I think, is brilliant. I love the melodies, you know, throughout the that last minute of the song. I love that kind of eerie female talking in the background. You know, Morrissey and the Smiths have done stuff like that throughout their career. So I kind of dug it. But, you know, 35 seconds into the song, you get the auto tune. And it just, you know, we've heard Paul change his vocals so many times. Just listen to, you know, McCartney too, and you know his vocals are, you know, are so you know, what's the word, you know, mirror or whatever, it's so changed, you know. But it's just the fact that it's auto-tune, and I just can't wrap my brain around it, you know. And I just can't get past it. I really can't. But that last minute is, you know, in my opinion, some of his best work in the last 30 years.
Wow.
Ooh. Wow.
Yeah. That, well, love that last.
What about you, Ken Michael? Were you able to wrap your brain around it?
Not necessarily. I don't hate the song like some fans do, and I've seen the reaction on Facebook. First of all, let me just say that I'm always able to, and I try to, separate the song from the recording, because the song is always what matters to me first. And as a song, I think it has really strong lyrics. I think the strength of the song comes in the lyrics, which are very sensitive, very personal, very poignant. It makes you feel like Paul's writing about a love that's lost. And I'm impressed by that. But as far as a melody, and to me, melody is always key. I'm more a melody guy than a lyrics guy anyway. There's very little here that's gripping me. He kind of talks his way through the song, maybe kind of in a poetic way. I don't know. But the only thing that sticks out in my mind after hearing this song about 10 times is hearing Paul sing, "Do you remember?" That's all that I remember about that song, really. And that's not the sign of a good song for me. As far as the whole thing about auto-tune, I've gone on record saying I hate auto-tune, but what I should say is I hate auto-tune when it's used as a crutch for people who can't sing, who can't hold on to notes or hit certain notes.
Right.
And I think that's been very bad for the music industry. But I don't mind when it's used for effect. And I believe, and I'm not totally sure about this, but back at the time when Cher had the song Believe, it was used as an effect on her voice, and it was, for a lot of people, they found it interesting. It's part of the reason why I think that song was a success. So I don't mind when it's used for an effect, and I don't mind it being used in this song. If you did a whole album of this, that would bother me. But one song, it's okay. I'm not bothered by it. And this is room for a whole other show. And because you always have people writing in saying, I wish Paul wouldn't try to sound contemporary. I wish Paul would do whatever the hell he wants to do and not care what his fans think, because he's earned that after all these years. You know, there's a lot of people who think he's Mr. Mainstream, you know, and they don't get to hear when he does experiment or try to incorporate some modern elements into his songs. And a lot of fans resist that. So, you know, I applaud him for trying to do something different, even though auto-tune's been around a long time. This is nothing new, folks. So, you know, I wish Paul would just, you know, do whatever the hell he wants to do with his music and not care so much. And that's part of the reason why he didn't put this on the album in the first place.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it would have been a backlash. People think about the furor all over Fayou. You know, and
I don't fucking get it. A good future episode to go to the opposite of this kind of mainstreaming McCartney sort of impetus would be his more experimental side, to talk about Hellraiser and the Fireman. Fireman, rather. That could be a fun show if you really talk about those experimental tracks, where he does certainly not try to be commercial,
right?
Any stretch, but rather to do interesting things with sonic textures. Well, folks, we are out of time, we will be back next week. You know, you can always send us your show ideas, and we will be most interested to hear what you'd like. And heck, we would probably do it. So there's that.
You just email us at talkmoresolotalk@gmail.com. You can go to our Facebook page and submit ideas there. You can follow us at Twitter at TalkMoreTalk1. Loads of places you can reach us.
Yep. All right. Don't forget to check us out on YouTube at Talk More Talk. Subscribe to the channel. And a couple of days after this live broadcast, Kit is so gracious with her time to, take care of all the editing for us and to put it up on YouTube and then on Podbean and then on iTunes and Spotify as well.
Yep.
So there's a lot of places. Yeah, a lot of places that you can catch the show.
Yes.
Well, she's not watering her plants. She's willing to carry out these tech duties. Anybody have any interesting news to share before we wrap it up? Queen.
My soul column is up at Blinded by Sound this week, and I will be coming out with a new Deep Beatles column at the end of this week. Just follow me on Facebook. You can also go to kidotool.com and find out when my next articles will be up.
Outstanding. Tom, going to be on a roof again soon?
Absolutely. I'm going to be outside in our next show. Anyways, I'm going to be in a field of roses. Anyways, you can catch my other show, Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast on Podbean. We just posted our last show last week. It was our year in review. So you can email us at twolegspodcast@gmail.com. Check out our Facebook page, Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast. And, you know, I'm on Facebook as well. So there you go.
Nice job, Ken Michaels.
My interview with Danny Seiwell, where we talk about wildlife, Red Rose Speedway. As time,
I heard that one was good. Yeah.
That's on my website on interviews page 4. And Danny just recently released an album with his jazz combo, the Danny Seiwell Trio, which I'm holding up right here.
Oh, and I'm giving it away.
What's that?
Hold it closer. That looks pretty good.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you recommend it, Tom? Ken?
I sure do, especially if you love jazz. These are excellent musicians, and they cover Live and Let Die on the CD. And I'm giving it away on my website on my Beatles Trivia and Games page. And as a matter of fact, starting this Friday, I'm giving away in a special contest Ken Womack's latest book.
Sound
Pictures.
Well, that's a price you cannot beat.
That's right. Called Sound Pictures. It's part 2 of the George Martin story. Takes you from 1966 to the end of his career. Can you hold up the book? You look like you have the book right, but I thought you were going to grab it.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. Here you go.
There you go.
Do you have the English, Kyle, the British version with you there too, huh?
Yeah, we got it all.
Yes.
So it's
well spotted.
It starts this Friday. It's a contest that lasts a week long. And I have 2 copies to give away of Sound Pictures. So if you want to win that, just go to my website. One last thing, since we're talking so much about wings, Denny Lane is playing in the New York, New England area. He's doing a whole series of dates. He's doing the entire Band on the Run album live, as well as the very first Moody Blues album live. And I have tickets to give away to see him at the Kate in Old Saybrook, Connecticut. And the concert is this Thursday, and the contest runs through tonight. So only you people who are watching the show have the best chance to win tickets to see Denny Lane in concert. But you can look on my website where it has concerts and events for Beatle fans. It's got all those dates. Anybody related to the Beatles that's performing in the area, Beatles tribute bands, is on that page. And there's a whole bunch of dates from Denny you should check out right there. So just go to KenMichaelsRadio.com for all that information.
Outstanding. Well, thanks, everybody. Have a good week, and we'll see you next time.
Night, everybody. Talk.